We stick with financial markets and look deeper into the irrationality of economics and the rules that financial markets are breaking around the world, and whether capitalism needs a shake-up. Chris Terry, Associate Professor in the Department of Finance at University Technology Sydney, talks to On the Money's Emily Blackburn about the next lot of global financial crises that are starting to show themselves around the world.
There's been some indicators coming out of the US lately that are probably showing that it isn't as rational as a lot of people tend to think, because there seems to be a bit of a decoupling of political events and financial markets in their reactions towards each other, with recent statistics showing that rising globalization and low interest rates are actually increasing corporate profits, but not along with the rest of the economy. So unemployment and all these other indicators aren't rising along with these corporate profits. Do you think this trend is likely to continue?
Yes. The broad issue is that how you make incomes and who gets the biggest incomes, of course, under a capitalist system, simply means that the bigger the system becomes, those at the centre can make more, with increasing use of technology and productivity improvements. But invariably, a declining proportion of populations can get those good jobs and can be at the front. So there's a huge, again, divide within academia between those who think the distribution of income matters, and a bloke called Joe Stiglitz, the Nobel Prize-winning American economist, argues in his recent book that does, and I'm partial to that view. And then you have the libertarians who argue it doesn't. And so those who make a lot of money earn it, and the rest simply, well, they don't. But where Stiglitz is arguing is that eventually societies have to work. And so income distribution matters both in a practical sense, in that a big chunk of the population have a small amount to spend. So why is spending slow? So why is economies progressing slowly? Well, a more equal distribution of income would produce a better balance in level of activity. But eventually societies are headed for major splits. You can't have high unemployment among young people across Europe, across anywhere in the long run. And there's nothing in libertarian economics and libertarian finance as a way of remedying that. And so we have this trend, which was started before John Maynard Keynes, that, you know, markets work perfectly. He observed in the Depression, well, it doesn't look like that to me, suggested we need to do something about it. Well, by about the 1970s, of course, it was then discovered, well, we had inflation, which Keynesian economics couldn't solve. And they thought, well, market economics, pure markets, will. And this was coloured by the Soviet issue and against America and their view that, you know, socialism is communism and it's a Russian system. And so they just think, well, clearly capitalist system won out. And so now we're down into this new swing of the pendulum that I think capitalism has gone too far. And so I think there does need to be greater use of collective decision making, which merely means more government. Whereas, you know, as Reagan and American libertarians are saying, they thought government was a problem, was the problem. And maybe in the 1970s that might have been true. But the situations all change and they're all cyclical. And so I think we're getting to a stage where, unless the world accepts we need to work more as a society, we're headed for some very big problems.
Is this where the term too big to fail could kind of fit in? Because obviously, I mean, there's organisations and corporations in America that are bigger than half of the world's countries' economies. So is that too much?
Well, too big to fail evolved out of the problems of major banks in the US, and it is applicable in many other countries. But it's combined with the fact that in the US they didn't have any effective regulation to ensure that the banks that were too big, that they were in fact too big to fail. Rather than once having failed, they were too big to let fail. And so they got themselves in a bind. Fortunately, Australia didn't, Canada didn't, many other countries didn't. But in a broad sense, also in the US, the political process has allowed major corporations and particularly industry blocks to take control of the government. And so again, one of the arguments, of going back to the libertarians, they're anti-government. And in one sense, I agree with them. I'm anti-government where government is captured by the industries and the big corporations in those industries. And that they are in that position for that reason. They want government to support them. So they have the power to prevent government to let them fail. In fact, going back to the banking system, I read a recent study of the value to the big banks of the bailout that they got. Because when you work out the benefit they received from that, it's in the dimensions of trillions of dollars. And that was the sector which was earning the highest proportion of income within the US economy.
Mm.
So too big and too powerful problems, and that's what I still think is part of this broader societal problems that's going to happen with the winners and losers, which is the outcome of the current arrangements.
I'd like to go on to another pretty broad societal problem, and that's natural disasters and climate change, and because this is another area that can affect financial markets. How can these natural disasters that seem to be occurring more and more often affect the financial markets around the world?
Well, major disasters have financial implications, so insurance companies know all about that. And so there's a range of markets have been developed so that the insurance companies themselves don't have to take all the risks associated with natural disasters. So you do have weather markets and a whole range of other markets where investors, in a sense through a gamble, share some of the risk of the insurance. But clearly, climate change will have major impacts on economies, and that will have massive impacts on values, which will have massive impacts on financial markets. But it's a societal thing. The financial markets, really, they're just really operating on the side. They're providing a platform to allow a certain amount of trading to go on. The real problem is that communities who are going to be adversely affected, how are the economies set up and how are the political systems set up to accommodate that? So in a very small way, boat people is an example of that. And you look at Australia as to how inept governments have been in handling these issues. Again, it's the problem with that on many matters, governments need to make good decisions and they need to be able to have more influence.
Do you think the economic and financial side of climate change has been spoken about enough? Do you think it's something that many people would even be aware of, that it would have these ongoing implications on all these other sectors of their life, other than obviously just the climate changing?
I think the biggest problem is that climate change is so difficult to specify. So there's always going to be disputes among scientists as to different aspects of it. So for the regular person, it's kind of very hard to understand this as an imminent event. If you're in Japan and the tsunami came, you can see it coming. But with climate change, the consequences come over decades. So it's very difficult to see. But certainly many financial markets assume that. There's markets, look at all the green industries. There's been, particularly in the US, there's been an amazing change within industry, which you don't see much written about because it is going on, but they're not. They just don't have command of the media, and they don't have command of the major policies. So, but nevertheless, many companies have assumed there will be changes, and they're trying to be ahead of the curve. And so a lot of them are like technology-based industries.
I think Germany is pretty top-notch in the industry these days. I don't know if that's one of the reasons why their economy is currently doing better than most of the others in the Eurozone. It might end up perhaps being a long-term indicator of keeping their strength up.
It could be. I think part of Germany is that they've been able to adopt a management-labour relationship for small to medium businesses, which have been allowing them, even though they're a wealthy country, to maintain competitive unit labour costs, and then they've been able to export, whereas countries like Italy and Greece, the sort of feather bedding that goes on within those countries means that the workers who have jobs are well off, but the unit labour costs are extremely high. So within Europe, you've got a few countries which are competitive, and most of them, France, Italy, Greece, are not. But again, they need to reorganise themselves because they've allowed interest groups to get control of operations for the economy and influence within government.
Chris Terry, Associate Professor in the Department of Finance at UTS,